You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes. Welcome to the Best Practices Show podcast. My name is Kirk Barron. I'm so excited you're here because I'm your host. And we bring you the best business topics in all of the business side of dentistry and the best practices. And boy, do I have an amazing treat for you today. You do not want to miss this. We're bringing back a good friend of ours, Dr. Becca Bacow, who is an incredible speaker, an incredible thought leader in this important topic in dentistry. And you're going to love this. Now, I want to say a couple things. If you're listening to the podcast for the first time and you're just listening on Spotify or iTunes, during the COVID conference last year, we got to know a lot of you, a lot of dental students, a lot of young dentists. And if you're finding yourself here for the first time, I just want to do a couple things. Number one, I want to welcome you to a great community where we're just here to learn. And you're going to see it's a fun place to be. And I'm going to encourage you. And if you're listening on your phone right now, go down to the subscribe button and hit the subscribe button. And because I want you to show up every single week. Every single week, we're going to bring you a brand new thought leader, a great teacher in dentistry to give you some great things to think about so you can create a better practice and a better life. And I don't want you to miss out on it. Also, if you haven't joined our Facebook group, we created this private Facebook group, and we still don't even really know how it works during the COVID conference, but it's been amazing to watch it grow and watch people help each other. So it's called the Best Practices, powered by ACT Dental. You'll see there's over 13,000 people over there. Just go over there and sign up, and you'll see any question you have, whether it be on what happens in your office, how do you change your hours, what are the hot topics, where are you guys finding this? It's dentists helping dentists and team members helping dentists. And it's just a great community. So check that out. And then lastly, if you're just looking for a place to grow your practice and improve your thinking, join us over at actdental.com where we have a ton of resources. You'll see we have ACTDental U, and Becca's been an instructor, and we'll have her back as an instructor again and again and again. Every single Friday, we have a great instructor in dentistry just bring us a masterclass to, you know, challenge the way you think. This morning we had Dr. Josh Austin talking about an incredibly important subject, which is the mental health dental connection. And he shared some powerful thinking there. And I'm just going to encourage you to check all that out. But it's great stuff over there. Now, I want to introduce my guest because, Becca, I got to know you. I had heard your name, and then we got to know each other. And then you were such a hero for us because you came onto the conference, and I'm like, and, you know, people had told me about you, you know, even all the guys at Spear, they're like, she's just really talented. And then I didn't know you were connected to Krieger. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like there's all the dots are connecting. And then we had you on the conference and I'm like, she's brilliant. Now, we're going to cover a very important subject that's very near to your heart and ours and everybody else in dentistry. But I want people to know, if they've never heard of Dr. Becca Bacow, who are you? Like, where do you practice and what do you do?
Sure. I'm an orthodontist. I'm dual trained as an orthodontist and periodontist. We practice primarily orthodontics in Seattle, Washington. I have two practices, one in Seattle, one in Bellevue. And our practice really is, it's an orthodontic practice. We straighten teeth, braces, Invisalign, but we also have a particular interest in skeletal growth and development. So the ages we really look at are early intervention, as early as maybe even 4 years old, and then all the way through adulthood, we do growth guidance. We work a lot with ENT sleep medicine for the younger kids as needed, and then and also myofunctional therapy, which we're going to talk about here, I think. And then we do a lot of jaw surgery as well for some of our older patients that need it. Yeah. A lot of TAD expanders and everything in between, interdisciplinary ortho. So really, really a pretty broad spectrum.
Yeah. Now, this thing called airway and being able to breathe, this is a pretty hot topic, wouldn't you agree? And I mean, I'm asking you questions you already know the answers to. You'll see, she's brilliant. This is not going away. This is a very, very important time. I always love to talk about the why. And today we're going to be talking about a very important subject that's been near and dear in your heart just in the last couple of weeks. But let's talk about the why before we get into the how.
So why do we care about airway?
Yeah. Why do we care about airway? And then when we talk about, you know, the missing piece in skeletal growth and development, why is this such an important topic to you and dentistry even this week?
Well, what's pretty incredible, and we're really at the forefront of this, like you mentioned, when we see a malocclusion, we might be, as dentists, the first providers to identify for some of these families, for the patients, that they do, in fact, have an airway issue. So this can present, for example, grinding. Grinding in kids and adults is a sign the airway's not great. We can pick up tongue ties. Certainly the easy ones to pick up would be like a cross bite, open bite, underbite, overbite. These are all linked to airway dysfunction. So once you see it, you can't not see it. And you'll start to see how prevalent it is. And so as care providers, we can sometimes ask open-ended questions for the patient. How do you breathe? How do you sleep? Really is a better question sometimes. And it opens up Pandora's box. Oh, I wake up through the night. Whether my child couldn't breastfeed, she's still wearing pull-ups at age 8. We've got a lot of behavioral concerns, not paying attention in school, comes into my bed every night, tired during the day. And we, as orthodontists, we see the crossbite. And so all of a sudden, we're tying things together for these families that they didn't even know were connected. So that's where it gets really, it's really rewarding and it's really powerful.
Yeah. And, you know, in dentistry, this is such an important topic in CE, and everyone is trying to get our brains around where this is headed. And, you know, I get these questions all the time, like, I don't even know how to incorporate this in my practice and all. I mean, you hear all these. And before you and I went live, I asked you, you know, what is something you're really thinking about or you're passionate about in the last, you know, couple of weeks or so? And then you said, you know, I'm really thinking about tongue dysfunction, and you used a term called apraxia. Did I say that right?
Yep.
Okay. Tell us more about that. What were you thinking about and why were you thinking about
it? Well, let's go back a little. So just to provide a little bit of context, if we think about skeletal growth and development, a lot of the key things that happen really early on. So going back even as early as breastfeeding. So think about what happens with breastfeeding. So a baby, once a baby's breastfeeding, first of all, a baby, it becomes an obligate nasal breather. So we're kicking off growth and development of nasal passages. Then we get mid-face development because of the movement of the jaws in order to empty the breast. And then we get the tongue has to come up and forward. And it's not just the anterior portion of the tongue, but it's actually the dorsum of the tongue. And so that full range of motion has to happen in order for a baby to breastfeed. And then, of course, masseter development because that lower jaw is moving forward. And so breastfeeding really kicks off facial growth and development. Now, thinking about the tongue, there's all of those movements require a great deal of coordination as well as flexibility and strength. And so if you have a child that has a condition called apraxia, this there's a lot of nuances to this, but so globally thinking about a child's ability to understand, for the child to be able to move the tongue in a way that's healthy. So getting that tongue up and forward. So things like muscle incoordination or things like tongue ties are going to adversely affect what's going to happen with the tongue. Maybe breastfeeding isn't successful, or maybe breastfeeding is okay, but later on there's speech issues. Maybe there's just flaccid musculature. And so now we fast forward to a two-year-old, a three-year-old, and maybe that child is constantly mouth breathing. So now it gets really interesting because now you have, let's say it's a two-year-old, a three-year-old, tongue is down and low, maybe because of low tone, maybe for a variety of reasons. So it's the tongue pushing into the roof of the mouth at these very early years. And that's what drives the growth of the maxilla. The roof of the mouth is the floor of the nose. It's kind of a crazy thing to think about. But if the tongue is up and forward during these formative years, we get development of the nasal passages. And the insertion of the tongue is in the mandible. And so if that tongue is up and forward, we get forward growth and development of the mandible. And so if we have a child that's a mouth breather at a young age, we have tongue down and back. So we have underdevelopment of the maxilla and subsequent underdevelopment of the mandible. And so once you start mouth breathing, it almost this becomes cyclic. So now you have a child that's mouth breathing. There's no impetus to use their tongue to get that tongue up and forward. So they're surviving basically with this low tone, the tongue down and back. The nose is a natural filter. So when you have the ability to breathe through your nose, the nose is going to humidify the air. It moistens the air. You filter out all the dust, the allergens, the pollens. Adenoids and tonsils are hypertrophic tissue. So if you have a child that's a mouth breather, we tend to see bigger tonsils, bigger adenoids. And so now this cycle continues because now they're more driven to breathe through their mouth because now they have nasal respiratory obstruction. And there's great documentation that links nasal respiratory obstruction with undersized jaws. And then we start to see other comorbidities that we would notice as dentists, which include grinding, high caries incidence, hypertrophic tissue, such as the gum tissue, and the cycle goes on and on. As orthodontists, we see this as crowding because the jaws are small. So there's insufficient bone to accommodate the eruption of the adult dentition. And so it's sort of this aha moment when we start to link what goes on early with breathing and tongue function or dysfunction and the way that we see the jaws grow.
Right, right. And, you know, you had mentioned that there's challenges with a lot of different things and how the masks are changing how we breathe too. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So this now kind of fast forwards to the adult. So like I mentioned in our practice, we see kids and we see adults. So now let's imagine we have an adult, let's say we'll pick an age 30-year-old female and a lifetime history of mouth breathing. Skeletal pattern is set. It's done. So now we have low downward backward jaw. So your typical class 2 patient, maybe in centric relation, she drops down and back. As humans, we're driven to get our lips together. I learned a lot of this from Dr. Michael Gunson, who's a genius, if anyone has a chance to learn from him. But so we want to get our lips together. We want to breathe through our nose. And so there will be this constant. And then just aesthetically, people want that lower jaw forward. And so if you have someone that has mandibular deficiency, they may have developed a habit to bring their lower jaw forward to try to breathe better. But if they think no one's looking, they might let their jaw drop down and back. And so we've had a handful of new patient consults during the pandemic where they have reported they used to have jaw pain because they were constantly posturing forward. But now that they have a mask on, they're sort of lazy. They let their lower jaw drop down and back into a more seated condylar position. They don't have the jaw pain, but of course they have an open bite.
Wow.
So it's kind of interesting.
It's very interesting. And you've got your work cut out for you because the environmental challenges that keep coming our way, whether it be with breastfeeding or like wearing masks and pandemics, and I think it's exacerbated with kids looking at blue light all night. I mean, it's kind of a moving target for you to get kids to develop normally and breathe healthy and all of that stuff. And You also noticed trends, and you had mentioned to me, you know, you had a patient come in as an 8-year-old boy, and you're just noticing some of these patterns. Can you talk about the boy that you saw at 8 and then comes back at 12?
Sure. So it's interesting when in the world of orthodontics, one of the things we really don't have a good answer about is mandibular growth. And if anybody says they have all the answers, I would say maybe ask some more questions. Right. So one of the theories out there is if you expand, you might get some mandibular growth, and I have seen that in our practice. But we have to think about it's not just about what we do skeletally; it's what the patient is doing habitually. And really it's the way we breathe and what we're doing with our tongue that really influences skeletal growth. And so you can take one child that has a deficient maxilla, maybe deficient mandible, and we expand and we get growth back on track. Tongue is able to come up and forward. We establish proper nasal breathing. We establish lips together. And that particular child's growth is going to progress in a really positive, healthy way. If we have another child, and this is what Kirk and I were talking about, I have this young man, we did expansion when he was 8. He had large tonsils. He had a tongue tie. He was grinding. So we did our portion. We expanded. We tried to get him to ENT. We tried to get him to myofunctional therapy. And we tried to continue on that process. Because I'll say as an aside, Kirk, these are interdisciplinary treatment plans. As an orthodontist, I can do a piece. But there's a much bigger picture. Barry Raphael really nicely said we have to attack structure, function, and behavior. And all three of those things have to happen in order to fully rehabilitate some of these kids. And so this young man, we did expansion, but the tongue continued to come forward. He saw ENT. ENT said, there's nothing to do here. I don't think they made it to myofunctional therapy, but they saw the pediatrician, they saw a lot of other providers, and no one really had answers for them. And so they did nothing. And so now we see him again at 12, and the lower jaw is still small. And so was it a bad grower? Did we not do the right thing? Or was it something that had to do with the way that, in general, is it maybe that kids are breathing with their mouth open, that tongue is coming forward? We never had a good lip seal. We never had that proper upward forward tongue movement. And so the lower jaw didn't grow in that forward direction. In orthodontics, we would label these as bad growers, but maybe it's not, maybe we're missing something. And so I have more questions than I have answers.
Yeah. You said, you know, I kind of think as the non-growers, it's kind of a cop-out a little bit, you know, there's just so much more to learn. That's what I love about you. You're always learning. You're never like, oh, I've learned this. You're like, you're on the cusp of what's going on. And you're asking, here's what I know about you. You ask better questions. You know what I mean? Like, why is that happening? Why is that happening? And then we also talked about tongue thrust too. And give us your latest thought on how tongue thrust, and I'm even examining like how I breathe, like, all of us want to breathe better. I want to breathe better. And I also watch these kids. I watch my own kids. And so tongue thrust is it's a big challenge, but give us your perspective on tongue thrust.
Sure. Well, I will say that in our practice, usually when I see an open bite, I look for tongue tie and I look for tonsils and I look for narrow arches. I think about the tongue like a water balloon. It is a fixed entity. And so it's going to go wherever it's going to go if it needs space. So the first thing we look for is narrow arches. Oftentimes, if we expand, the open bite closes because volumetrically we've made more space for the tongue. But it really comes down to etiology. We've seen a lot of kids that have large tonsils when they have either a lateral or forward tongue. I would like to maybe rename it as a tongue placement habit or an aberrant swallow, because if a child has large tonsils, he or she is going to bring that tongue forward as a defense mechanism to open the airway. If we think about airway, it's nasal passages, and then up here are the adenoids, and then right back here, there's base of tongue and tonsils. And so by bringing that tongue forward, a child's able to open the airway pretty quickly. That's the same idea with grinding. If we get that lower jaw forward, it opens up the airway because it brings the lower jaw forward. And so historically, a lot of orthodontists will use things like tongue tamers, which block, yes, it prevents that child from bringing their tongue forward. But once you take the tongue tamers away, who's to say that's a stable change? We need to really try to identify the etiology. So looking for tonsils, look airway issue, and then look for tongue ties. We see a lot of anterior tongue ties when we see anterior open bites because of the tight tongue connection. That swallow can only happen in a forward direction and the tongue can't come up. And so trying to understand structure, function, behavior. So structure meaning the jaws, function meaning can a child breathe through his or her nose? Does the tongue have the physical mobility to come up? And then behavior being, is the child or the adult able to breathe with lips together, able to breathe through their nose in a habitual manner? And so we have to really re-examine things like an open bite. So for example, I've seen adults that have had four teeth taken out and orthodontic mechanics to try to retract everything. So if we think about, I'll go back. So the tongue pushing is going to lead to the teeth kind of in this proclined manner. So you could bring everything back and you could go so far as to take out teeth to bring it back even more. But airway will always win. So the tongue will keep coming forward. And so you have this constant open, close, and then the adults will end up with root resorption. And they'll still end up with an open bite because the tongue will always win. And so I've treated these cases, and then it's a surgical correction, but now the roots are incredibly short. And so this doesn't always happen. I don't want to say this is always the case, but just rather a statement that we can look at open bites really differently if we talk about tongue and we talk about airway.
The Best Practices Show with Kirk Behrendt is brought to you exclusively by ACT Dental, the ultimate provider of dental practice management solutions for dentists and their teams. ACT Dental is committed to helping you build a better practice and a better life. If you're looking to grow your production, motivate your team, get back on track, and create the practice you've always dreamed about, look no further. Give us a call at 800-851-8186 or visit us at actdental.com.
Now, go back to this. So when you talk about attacking, you know, structure, function, behavior, as an outsider, I would think even if you're an amazing clinician, the first two we can get our brains around. That third piece of it, that's a harder thing, don't you think? I would be so curious. How do you talk to parents or patients on the behavior side of things? Because you as an orthodontist, you can only get it as close as you can get it. And then you got the behavior piece. And that's, some orthodontists might be watching this going, I didn't sign up for that piece. Like, what are your thoughts on that?
So, you know, when we think about implant dentistry, when we think about aesthetic cases, we work with an interdisciplinary team. And so the same is true with these patients. So structure, that's the orthodontist. Function would be ENT. And maybe the dentist that's doing, so ENT would do tonsils, adenoids, and then we need, in some cases, phrenectomy, which can be done by a variety of providers. But then behavior is, in our area, is the myofunctional therapist. And so the way I talk to parents about it is I say it's physical therapy for the tongue, for the way we breathe. And that seems to make a lot of sense for families, because similar to if you have a shoulder surgery or if you have a sports injury, we have to rehabilitate. We have to train the body to use these muscles differently. And it makes a lot of sense. If you have narrow arches and you've never had the space to get that tongue up and forward into the right spot, then you don't have the muscle memory. You don't have the muscle tonicity, the flexibility to do it. And so most kids, thank goodness, when you expand, they autocorrect, but not everybody does. And that's really where myofunctional therapy comes into play.
Yeah. So you hear these two, and let's say I'm a young orthodontist and I'm watching you and I'm inspired. And I say, Becca, but you don't understand, I'm in a small town. Like, there's no I mean, can you, because I get these questions too, and I don't know what to tell them. Can you offer some hope for them? Or they say, you know, I'm either in a small town, there's no myofunctional therapist here. And then even if I'm in a bigger town, like it's hard getting on the same page. What advice or hope would you give to them?
Well, interesting question, because I just got off the phone this morning with a hygienist that's training to become a myofunctional therapist. I think there's a lot of great online courses right now. There's a lot of people, at least in our community, that are learning how to do myofunctional therapy. I talk to dentists all over the country. A lot of them have either trained they've asked their hygienist to go through the training, or there's someone in their community that is undergoing the training. There's a lot of great online programs right now for myofunctional therapy. And I think the interest is really there. I think also a lot of myofunctional therapists are providing services remotely right now. So there are opportunities for families to find a myofunctional therapist and to do a lot of work via Zoom. So another positive thing from the pandemic.
Yeah, I love it. I think the education will only help all of us. And it's amazing how many people are having this conversation. The cool part is that people are talking about this now a lot, you know, and again, it's not going away. It's an important piece. What other things do you see that are challenges on, you know, the skeletal aspect in the future when we look at interdisciplinary dentistry?
Challenges for the practitioner, for patient care.
Or skeletal growth, I would say. Just we'll stick to the patient today, because I'm going to have you back and we'll cover other things. And we might even do a point counterpoint with like some great GPs like Bill Robbins, because this is awesome stuff. And we can talk about this side of the chair. But let's talk about the patient today. What do you think? What other challenges are presented for patients today?
Sure. So maxillary growth is very predictable. So we can expand. We can protract, so we can widen, we can bring that upper jaw forward. We can do that in young kids, and we're seeing pretty good results with some of our older kids when we start to use TADS. We've been able to successfully get that maxilla forward in 18-year-olds and in that age range, which is kind of unheard of before we were using TADS. Mandibular growth is the one that's unpredictable. And that's where this function and behavior piece come really into play. And I think hormones too is another thing, hormones and inflammation. We don't really talk about that as much as we could in orthodontics. So I have a lot more questions than I have answers about mandibular growth. I think a lot of us in orthodontics will use functional appliances at early ages, but a lot of people will start treatment in teenage years. Part of me also wants, I think about what's happening with what's impeding growth at a young age. For example, if we see a child, let's say a 5-year-old, 6-year-old, and they constantly are biting their lower lip. So now they've become their own functional appliance, but in the wrong direction. So that constant, we call it a lower lip entrapment. If we as orthodontists do nothing about that and we let them continue into age 12, of course the mandible is going to be small. Of course they're going to have a persistent overbite. And then talk about mouth breathing. They can't get their lips around the teeth because the upper teeth are so protrusive. And so the canons of orthodontics say don't treat, for example, a small mandible until the patient's in their pubertal growth spurt. I can't say that that's wrong, but I also have a lot of questions about that. So maybe we have to look at what's happening in terms of habits early on, and maybe there's some other answers that we can provide, like how the child is breathing or what are they doing functionally, whether it's lower lip entrapment or what's going on with the tongue, what's going on with breathing habits. The other one is a deep bite. So if the top teeth are completely covering the bottom teeth and the patient is class 2, where's the lower jaw going to go? The lower jaw can't grow because it's trapped by the teeth. So maybe doing things as simple as maybe a bite plate at an early age. So I have a lot of questions about early treatment and early intervention and what's reliable, what's predictable, and how does it differ from kid to kid? And then thinking about condylar growth, there's just a lot of questions.
Yeah. One of my questions too, because I understand the importance breathing through your nose. Give us some insight as a father of 4 kids. Now, Jeff Rouse gave me the tape you know, several years ago. And I'm so grateful because I sleep so much better. I take this little tape that he gave me, and now I've got the things, and it works for me. And as I talk to my kids as a dad, like it's a struggle. So any coaching you would give me, because I know how important it is.
Coaching for kids or adults?
Let's do both. Let's do adults and then let's do kids.
So for adults, just like you said, I think whatever we can do to get nasal breathing back on track. So mouth taping, nose strips, saline rinses, all those things are really great. If in fact you do have a diagnosis of a deviated septum, maybe looking into treating that. And then for kids, similar, but maybe looking at some. Now, I'll share with you, I'm on this journey. My daughter just started. I noticed she's snoring. She's 2.5. And so we're trying to figure this out. So using air filtration, humidifier at night, saline spray, and we've actually cut out dairy from we did a full elimination diet. Now we're doing it just lunch and dinner. And there's some good evidence that that dairy will increase mucus production. So just really working hard on trying to get these kids to breathe through their nose with lips together, tongue up.
Yeah. And so this will be another episode, but I have a deviated septum. My wife is like, you're going to have to get, you know, I applaud the journey that you're on because I think you're going to change dentistry. And I think you're going to help a lot of people just live better lives. I mean, just through what you're teaching. So I'm going to have you back again and again and again, but I want to ask you one last question before we wrap this up. It's anyone's guess what the future of the study of this looks like. But what are you most excited when you look at the years and months ahead? What can you expect in the study of airway and orthodontics? I mean, what could you hope for?
Well, I think globally, it's all the things we've talked about. It's forming these connections and looking at things in a really different way. We've never asked the question, why do we see crowding? As orthodontists, we've always thought, how can we fit the teeth together? So this is a real paradigm shift saying, why? Why is there crowding? Why do we have the open bite? Why do we have the cross bite, the underbite, the overbite? And when we treat the why, when we treat the etiology, not only can we get a more stable result potentially, but we're also going to hopefully have a healthier patient. And so that's where it gets really exciting.
It's awesome. Now, I want you to tell people, you do a lot of teaching at Spear, and we have a lot of people that go, I think it's amazing, and it's a lot of our good friends. If somebody wanted to learn more about this, like, how do I get started on this journey? Where can I see you speak? Like, where do I start? Give us some insight on that.
Well, I think Spear Education is really at the forefront of providing this information. I know you have Jeff Rouse on the show, and Mike Gunson and I have a course. Dr. Gunson's an amazing oral surgeon out of California, and we have a phenomenal interdisciplinary course out of Spear Education where we really talk about these skeletal growth patterns and intervention. And then we'll be adding more material over the next few years, and it's just an honor and a privilege to be part of their program, and just a lot of great educational material. So join us at Spear Education for sure.
Yeah. And so if you're listening right now, we're going to put all of that into the show notes below. So you can just click on it down there. You'll see Dr. Becca Bacow's email address. You can send her email address if you want emails. I don't know. You also mentioned follow you on Instagram, and I'll put up your Instagram handle because you've got some really cool stuff up there. And then one last thing, I'm going to ask you this. I didn't tell you I was going to ask you, but you changed the name of your practice. And it was important to you. So just, can you tell us about that? Why'd you change the name of your practice during the pandemic?
Sure. Well, we wanted a play on the airway theme. So Inspired Orthodontics. Also, everyone, the practitioners in our practice all love to teach. So to inspire those that want to learn. And then, of course, to inspire to take a breath.
Well, I will tell you firsthand, you are doing both. So you are definitely inspiring all of us. And I couldn't be more grateful to have you on today. And I know you're going to do a masterclass. If you guys have not seen Becca teach, you have to. It will inspire you. you're just on the forefront of this great, important topic. And so thank you for being on today. So awesome.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Now stick around while we say goodbye to everybody else. If you're listening to this and you enjoyed it, do us a favor, hit the share button, share this with your friends. Keep sending us suggestions. I get them all the time on things that you guys want to hear about, whether it be from Becca or anyone else. I'll line up the shows and we'll ask Becca the hard questions so that we don't have to come up with it. And she's probably going to have more questions based on those hard questions, which is always fun. And until we see you guys next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show. You guys enjoy the rest of your day. There you have it. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Best Practices Show. I hope you sure did enjoy it. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to us. We are always here for you. And if you haven't done so already, make sure you subscribe to the show on iTunes or wherever you consume podcasts. And if you really enjoy it, you can leave a comment or a 4 or 5 star review. But until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show.